How you doing? Well, it's that time of the week again. Time waits for nobody, of course. It's time for another installment of our weekly sports podcast, Talking Point. It's your weekly podcast in which we engage in debate with our top citizen sports journalists who keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, we line up some special guests. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cramer. Rugby and netball on the sporting buffet this week. We'll dish up a feast as usual for you. So let's crack on. Joining me on Talking Point on the hotline this week to talk Springboks and some perhaps a versatile backline player in his playing days, part of the 2007 Springbok World Cup winning squad, 72 caps for the box and more than a bucket full of tries in the green and gold, provincial and super rugby for the Lions and the Stormers, a stint in Japan, long, very attractive CV, and now the defense coach of the Lions back home. A warm welcome to the show, Jacques Fourie. Welcome, Jacques.
Awesome, guys. Thank you for having me.
Joining me in studio this week, a regular member of the Talking Point team, great contributor, mindful of sporting knowledge, not much you can corner him on, the head of Citizen Sport. Welcome back to Jacques van der Westhuizen. Nice to have you with us in studio as always, Jacques.
Yeah, how's it, Trevor? Hello, Jacques. Welcome, everybody. Should be a good one today.
And on the Talking Point hotline this week, another of our expert panelists, pretty much an all-rounder. He'll be joining us shortly. He's dabbled in virtually every sport in his storied career, an athletics and Olympic sports specialist. Wesley Botten will be joining us shortly, so we welcome back Wesley. Yes, a big high-profile events. They're coming flying at us, and there's still a lot more to come this year. There's a Rugby World Cup, a Cricket World Cup, the soccer seasons around the globe already in pre-season mode. Lots to look forward to. But right now the focus is predominantly on women's sport, the FIFA Women's World Cup on the go in Australia and New Zealand, and the eight-day-long Netball World Cup underway. That's on our doorstep in Cape Town. But before we get onto the netball court, let's talk rugby. I'll kick it off as usual, but as always, Jacques van der Westhuizen can pick up the pass and run with the ball wherever possible. To simplify our lives, I'll just refer to you as Jacques F. Jacques, and opposite me, Jacques V. We got both of them
perfect
in the studio. No confusion here. Jacques F. First, let's look quickly at the team selection for what is effectively the box final test at home this year. Los Pumas, Argentina. Rotation, bomb squads, giving everyone a run ahead of the World Cup squad selection, it seems. What do you make of the latest lineup that Jacques Nienaber and co have churned out this week? I'm particularly looking forward, from my personal perspective, to seeing the starting halfback combination. That's Marnie Libok and Grant Williams. Jesse Creel back in midfield with Damien Dalenda. And that bench. What does one say, Jacques F?
Yeah, I think we're in a very fortunate position, Russia and them, and South Africa, fortunate position where we can actually pick two sides that can any given day beat an international side. So for me, I'm also excited about the side. If you think about the guys that's playing now, it's the guys that came off the bench against New Zealand, and those were the guys that made a massive impact in that game, and we also almost turned it around. So for me, it's an exciting side. I think, like I say, Grant Williams had a great URC, Marnie Libok also. So it's good to see guys that's on form, that's in the team. And I think it's going to be a great match this weekend with that side.
Jacques, just looking at that team and that, you know, something that stands out for me is sort of the uncertainty nearly around Damien Willems. He's on the bench again this week. You were a guy that started out, you know, at fullback on the wing a bit, and then you settled at centre. You know, Damien played fly half last week. Where do you see his future? I know you're not his coach in that, and you don't know him intimately or closely, but, you know, he's a guy that sort of doesn't seem to settle or isn't settling in a specific position. From your own experience, is it a difficult thing if you're so versatile?
Yeah, I think it is difficult. Like you said, I think he's struggling to get a position for him. Is it fly off? Is it fullback? I actually thought when he played for the Stormers URC, when he played 12, I enjoyed him at 12. I think, you know, and we actually were talking about it the other day in the office here at Alliance that we actually agreed that the future, I would play him at 12, you know, he can get over the gain line. He's got good feet. He can be a second receiver kicker to get you in the positions that you want to play. So it is a tough thing. It can play in your favor, but can also play, you know, if you have a look at the times with Ruan Pienaar also that we played at the box with him. Then he was playing fullback. Then he was playing scrum off. Then he was playing a fly off, you know. It's good, you know. The thing is with those players, you always have to have them in your team, I think, because they are so versatile and they are so talented.
Yeah, and then just looking at the back division, that back three, Willie LaRue's obviously an established guy there, but Chestlin and Kirtley Aronson. Chestlin's been around for a while, but Kirtley's really come on nicely in that. But it's a small back three. You know, any thoughts around that? Do you have any concerns around the size of those guys? I know Chestlin has showed us in the last couple of years that size, it doesn't really matter. But with Kirtley there as well, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, like you said there, Jacques, size, I mean, they've showed that size do not matter. Those guys are even, you know, if not better in the air when they kick at them or when they have to go for the contestable ball. So, and I mean, even with ball in hand, they are devastating with ball in hand. So it's not a matter of how big or you small you are. Those two have just been the last 2, 3, 4 years has just been unbelievable players. So they're good finishers. So give them half a gap or half a second, they're gonna destroy you. So like you said, their jock size doesn't matter.
What do you feel Argentina bring to the table, Jacques? If they're off a win over the Wallabies, the most common words bandied about I've heard this week by players seems to have been we're expecting a hard grind from the Pumas. Now, Jacques, if where could it potentially be won and lost this week? For me, the aerial battles and perhaps pack dominance come to mind immediately.
Trevor, yeah, I agree with you. I think pack dominance. I think they, if you look at their pack forwards, it's a tough pack forwards. You know, they're never gonna go away. They're gonna chip at you for 80 minutes. They're gonna come hard at you. So for me, the forward battle is going to be very, very important. And then, you know, they've got whoever they pick, and you know, I don't know if they pick their side, whoever they pick at fly off, you know, you've got Bofili at the back that's also good in the air. Their wingers is good in the air. So I think the aerial battle is going to be important for us. But like I said earlier with the question Jacques asked, you know, our wingers are very good in the air. Willie is good in the air. So if we can nullify them with that and get over the advantage line with our big pack of forwards, you know, I think it's going to be a long day for the Pumas.
Jacques, I know you finished up in South Africa at the Stormers and in Cape Town and that, but the Ellis Park factor is obviously quite a big one. You know, a lot of teams sort of come to the Highveld and that, and they come to Joburg, and it's usually a high-scoring, fast-paced game here in Joburg. You know, from your time playing and even coaching now, you know, is there a big difference between fields and just a general feeling that you get on the day playing on a specific field? And can we expect another high-scoring game? Does Joburg and Ellis Park present that self to the players?
For sure, Jock. I think Ellis Park, like you said, I mean, since that we've played and even the test before that, has been a good hunting ground for the Springboks. I don't think we've lost too many games at Ellis Park. You know, when there's a packed Ellis Park, the pitch is also looking good at the moment. So it's a fast pitch. It's a high scoring game. So it's intimidating for teams to come to Joburg, you know, to come and play the Springboks, to come and play the Lions. It is intimidating. You know, it's tough. And if you haven't gotten adapted to the conditions here, luckily it is winter, so it's not a summer's day, so that's the one positive. But it's still tough coming to play here.
Looking ahead to the World Cup, perhaps, Jacques, if, as we've seen these past few weeks, a significant squad rotation from the box, 9 changes alone this week. But one feels Nienaber and co. already have their 33-man World Cup squad in mind. Now, Jacques, if, what do you think the biggest headaches, perhaps, are still when it comes to selection? Some really good fringe players are putting their hands up.
Yeah, Trevor, I think, like you say, I think they've already made their minds up. So, I mean, for, you know, this is probably, they've still got a lot of games before, you know, 2 or 3 warm-up games still ahead of the World Cup. But, I mean, your World Cup squad probably needs to be announced in the next few weeks. You know, there's, I think, at fly off there still. If Pollard is you know, doubtful, or whatever his situation is, there is still, you know, a little bit of doubt there. Marnie is doing well, but I think there's, you know, and even at scrum off, I think they were with the rotation and stuff, you know, I think they also just seeing what's going to happen there. So for me, you know, I think they've already made up, you know, they've got the bulk of their squad. There's probably just going to be one or two or three guys that still got a chance to get into the squad.
Jacques, just from our side, finally, you know, off-season now for you guys. What happens in an off-season? It's a fairly long off-season for the, you know, the Lions and the URC teams and that sort of thing. Are you guys busy with anything at the moment, or are the players still getting a break? You know, shifting our focus now from the box.
Yeah, no, Jock, with management and players have got we had a five-week break now that we had, a good deserved break. We started off on Monday again, so it's going to be a long preseason. I think we've got a three-month preseason before the first game starts. So what's happening is now we gradually bring the guys, you know, starting with a high volume running to get their baseline up to scratch, and then with strength and conditioning that we're doing in between. And then we've got some skill work also in the afternoon where we do the guys' static skills. So we're gradually building it up week by week by week until, you know, we've got the next 3 weeks that we're training. Then we've got a week off. Then we come back for another three weeks off, and then we're into our training games, last two games before the competition starts. So it is quite a long preseason, but we have planned everything to the T, what we want to do and how we're going to do it. So hopefully when the game starts, the guys are still fresh after this long season and we can hit the ground running.
And that's where we'll leave it rugby-wise this week. Before we say goodbye to Jacques F., just to let you know, tickets for the Argentina test still very much available. The Lions encouraging fans to show their support for the box in their last home game before the World Cup. So get your tickets, get behind the box this weekend. You can still book at ticketpro.co.za. Jacques Fourie, pleasure to chat to you as always. Thank you for joining us on Talking Point this week. And we hope to chat to you soon about rugby matters pertaining to your job, and that's as the defense coach at the Lions. Thanks for joining us, and awesome. All the very best.
Thank you, Trevor. Thanks, Jacques. Have a good day.
Thanks, Jacques. Cheers. All the best. Bye.
I'm going to move mid-court with Wesley right now. Thanks for your patience, Wes, talking netball. First World Cup on African soil. It's all happening in Cape Town. With that in mind, let's look briefly on the African teams. Netball has a rich history on our continent, funnily enough. South Africa, Malawi, Uganda and Zimbabwe are the African representatives. But West, our Proteas, understandable, they've got lofty ambitions to step on the podium on home soil, and not to mention the huge expectations, of course. Wales, Sri Lanka and Jamaica, they're in Group C to get by initially in the first pool stage. Their best placing was second back in 1995. Talk us through that one, Wes.
Yeah, it's been a long time since they were on the podium. Like you say, they're facing a tremendous amount of pressure. There's certain statistics that we can look at to give us an indication of how hard it's going to be for them. You know, they've never beaten Australia, for example. I don't think they've beaten New Zealand since 1994. So Just to get into the playoffs is going to be difficult. Fortunately, it's a relatively easy group because in the first round, there's four sides and the top three all go through. And the only other big team that we're facing is Jamaica. So in terms of the first round, I think they should be able to coast through. Wales are not really world beaters. You know, so it's going to be hard, I think, in the closing stages for them. And first couple of rounds, not too difficult, but ultimately for them to get onto the podium, they're going to have to beat two of the teams that are ranked higher than them. And that's going to be a real challenge, I think.
Wes, out of the other African teams, who do you actually fancy to go deep in this tournament? Malawi and Uganda have always punched well above their weight in this game.
Yeah, Malawi for a long time were actually ranked above South Africa. And I don't know really what's happened there, but they've kind of fallen back a little bit over the last few years. They're not the same side that we saw maybe 10 years ago. So again, I suppose they'll be hoping to punch above their weight. But a real side to look at is Uganda. They play a very different style of netball. And some of the top teams in the world have really struggled against them in the last few years. They're such an aggressive side. They really play a fast game and they come out hard. And it kind of takes some of the other teams by surprise. Maybe they'll be a bit more used to them at this point. But South Africa's lost to Uganda as well. And I think that they probably, aside from South Africa, in terms of the African teams, I think they're probably the one to look for.
One has to feel where surely the winner is going to come out of the top five: Australia, New Zealand, England, Jamaica, South Africa, if the rankings are anything of a guide.
Yes, and I think they really are. I think those are probably the top contenders. I don't really see anyone other than those five teams coming through to win. You know, we just mentioned Uganda. They're probably the next best team, but you know, they are still a little bit off the pace, and I don't know if they're going to be able to produce the kind of performances that they have to consistently enough. You know, they can't just beat one big team. They've got to do it a few times. And I think South Africa's probably got a better chance of doing that.
Wes, mathematics has never been my strong point. Statistics have never been my strong points. Very quickly, the format of this tournament. It all looks very, very confusing to me. Can you just enlighten us very briefly in the most simplistic way possible of how this format actually works?
It's a little frustrating. I don't know why they structure it the way they do. They had the same structure at the last World Cup. And what they do is they've got four teams in four pools in the opening round, but the top three in each pool go through to a Super 6 round where they've got – well, it's a Super 12 where they've got two pools of six teams. And the top two teams in each of those pools will then go through to the semifinals. In a major championship, that structure would usually be, you know, from the pool stages, two in each group go through to quarterfinals and straight into playoffs. And what it results in, the way that they've structured it, is that every team is playing a lot of games. So you're looking at eight matches before they even get into the playoffs, and the teams are playing every day. So it's brutal. It really is a tough competition. It's 10 days. None of the teams get any breaks. It's not like, you know, the rugby or the football World Cup where the sides have got a few days between games to kind of, pull themselves back together. Every day they got to go out and court and they've got to perform. So it is a difficult structure to the tournament, but I suppose, you know, every team's got to go through the same thing.
And to wrap it, Wes, the profile of this tournament has been pretty low by most accounts in South Africa in any event, and that's in the build-up, and the LOC has been beset with problems. But the fact is, netball actually has a very high participation rate in our country, and it's an extremely popular girls' and women's sport. Do you feel this event will grow the sport locally? I mean, the post-tournament legacy is obviously critical.
Yeah, we hope so. It would be nice if it does do something for the game. Like you say, netball, I think outside of football, is the highest participation sport in the country. And I've always felt that the only problem in terms of, you know, support from South Africans is that the Proteas just don't play often enough. They do seem to gather support when they play, but then we don't see them again for 5 or 6 months, and then they'll play in three games, and then we don't see them again for 6 months. And for that reason, I just don't think that they're in the, you know, the public eye enough for people to really develop an interest in following them. So now that they're playing at home, like you say, we haven't had as much hype as you would hope in the build-up. It is a World Cup tournament. But, you know, it is what it is, and hopefully the country gets behind them during the tournament. And if the Proteas moving on from here can get more games, if they can compete more often, I think netball is an exciting enough sport that South Africans will watch it. But, you know, those are long-term issues, and I don't know, to be honest, if the World Cup is going to fix that.
And that's where we'll nip it, Wes. But you're not getting off lightly, as usual. Stick around. Before we blow the final whistle this week, it's our popular Flop and Gold Star of the Week feature. My flop of the week, unfortunately, and I think we're both looking in the same direction. It's been a pretty decent sporting week, and there haven't actually been many, but I'm leaning towards the swimmer Laura van Niekerk. Not cutting it in the pool in Japan, and pretty sad after all the hype surrounding her and the great expectations. And my gold star this week, it goes to, well, lots of contenders, but I'm awarding it to the Philippines women's football squad. They won a World Cup match for the first time, stunned the co-host New Zealand 1-0 in their group game earlier this week. That's at the Women's World Cup. We all love fairy tales, don't we? But well done to the Philippines. And also well done to little Brian Harman for capturing the Open Championship at Hoy Lake. Let's head across the table and see what Jacques has on this one.
Yeah, I agree. My star of the week, I agree with you. Brian Harman was fantastic in the Open over the weekend. Really deserved that win, even though few gave him any chance going into it, but played the best golf over the weekend, and well done to him. I also think Heinrich Klaassen deserves a pat on the back this week, scoring the first century in the newly established Major League Cricket in the USA. Scored 110 not out of 44 balls for the Seattle Orcas. So, you know, Heinrich Klaassen has really come into his own over the last couple of years in T20 cricket, and he's done fantastically well. My flop of the week is the South African golfers in general, performing so poorly at the Open once again. It's something we've discussed regularly at the Citizen in the last couple of months. None of our golfers are doing anything really particularly special at the moment. Christo Lamprecht was superb in an opening round to share the lead, but then he also fell away, and so many of our golfers missed the cut, fell away in the last two rounds. I don't know where we're going to get our next major champion from, but it's going to take a while, and hopefully one of those juniors can come through.
Wes, where are you leaning?
I'm looking in the pool this week. You know, it's the Olympic Games next year, so it's great to see Tatjana Schoenmaker on the podium at the World Championships. I think that's a good indication that we might see her on the podium at the Olympics. And then we don't want to beat up on her too much. She's only 20 years old, but she is a real prospect, and it was a little disappointing to see Laura van Niekerk not getting through to the 100-meter final at the World Champs. There's no 50-meter at the Olympics next year, so she's going to have to pick up her socks a little bit over the 100-meter distance.
That's where we leave it. You have yourself a great sporting week with the Citizen as your companion, both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, thank you as always for joining us. Always a treat to chat to you. Also to our hotline guest again, and that's Wesley Botten on netball, and of course Jacques Fourie, who joined us a little bit earlier. My name's Trevor Kramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Why not follow the Citizen News on Iono FM? You'll also find the podcast on the Citizen's YouTube account. Remember, as always, don't wait for the opportunity. Simply create it. Till next time, take it easy. Have yourself a great week. Cheers for now.